WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. This morning, I'm going to play a trident of Act Ones. The first one I got here should be episode 14, originally aired on the 26th of December, 1937. However, the archive, it gets a little muddied here with some of these early shadows. I'm going to go ahead and play the one I found, again, the voice of death, but this may or may not be, well, first of all, it's not Orson Welles and Agnes Moorehead. I'm not certain if it's Brett Morrison or Marjorie Anderson from the 1940 episode of the same title. I guess the original one was written by a Carl Bigsby. I don't know. It indicates it's preserved and all some of the stuff I've seen, some of the reference points. But I do know that some of the smaller radio stations I've read would take radio episodes and rebroadcast them with their own acting troupes. Say, for example, like Detroit or Buffalo or Minneapolis, San Francisco, they have their own radio stations. Their actors would do rebroadcasts, recreations of some of these shows. So the first one here should be episode 14, The Voice of Death. But again, I'm not so certain. I'll let you listen. We're just going to listen to a few minutes of it, see some of the differences than what they're accustomed to hearing with Orson Welles.
Person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's story, The Voice voice of death.
You almost finished reading your paper?
Yes, Annie.
Time to go to bed, ain't it?
Yes, Annie.
Better make sure all the windows are shut. Sounds like a real mean storm coming up.
Yes, Annie.
Sam?
Hmm? Yes, Annie.
Did you hear that?
What?
You hear it? Sounds just like little kittens.
Yeah. Well, I wonder where they come from.
Well, the poor things, outdoors on a night like this. Sam, will you go out and find them? Go on, will you?
No, Annie, you don't.
Just listen to them little critters. Ain't you got no heart, Sam?
Oh, all right. Where's my raincoat?
Oh, here you are. I'll set up a little box for them by the fire.
Mm. All right, now. Stop your crying, kitten. I'm coming. Just wait.
I'll eat up a bit of milk, too. Do you see him, Sam?
No, not yet.
Sam, what's wrong? What in the name of all the family? Sam, what happened? Sam, blood. You're all covered with blood.
Rose, you saw my...
Sam, how could kittens do... Sam, he's dead. Well, I must say, Margo, we picked a fine day to go visiting.
You want no secret, Margo?
I'm your man.
This whole thing is just an effect.
Huh? A trap, Dad?
People always look for a mysterious atmosphere in the Louisiana bio, so Mother Nature very obligingly provides for it.
Oh, I see. Well, I must say that sunshine wouldn't make a great deal of difference. I don't see how it could ever penetrate those moss-laden trees. Much further to go, Lamont?
I don't think so. Arthur told me the house was exactly 5 miles from that last bridge.
Why in the world would anyone want to live way off like this?
Well, the house has been in Arthur Whittington's family for many, many years. Arthur, being a rather peculiar chap, I don't suppose it bothers him in the least.
No. Forgive me for appearing dull, but I don't get it.
Well, Margo, it's a long story. It began in college when we took a medical course together. I guess I was the only person in the whole school who really understood him.
Why was that?
Well, Arthur was a brilliant student, but he was also a highly sensitive lad, always imagining that people were making fun of him, laughing at him behind his back.
Was there any reason for that?
Well, yes, there was. It was his voice. He had the harshest sounding voice I'd ever heard. It cracked, it rasped, it did everything that a voice shouldn't do.
Really?
In fact, it was his voice that made him leave medical school.
I'm sorry, Lamont.
Well, it all happened one day in class. Arthur had prepared a paper, an excellent paper that he had to read aloud to the student body.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, please, please. You may proceed, Mr. Whittington. Well, Mr. Whittington, where are you going? Wait, why are you leaving the classroom? Well, he threw down his paper and walked right out of the room.
Boy.
I've never heard of him since. But we've corresponded. And then, as you know, when he learned that we were down here in Louisiana fishing, he got in touch with me and invited us out to see him.
Well, that goes a long way toward explaining his living out here so far from civilization. You know, he still must be sensitive about that horrible voice.
Yes, I'm sure he is. But remember, we mustn't do anything to call attention to it.
Oh, heavens, no, I won't. Come on, there's something right ahead on the road.
Yes, Marty, yes, I see it. This rain on the windshield is hard to... Wait, it's some sort of a fence.
Well, it looks like we've reached the end of the line, and not a house in sight.
Well, there seems to be a sign on it. We better get out and investigate. Button up that raincoat, Margo.
Oh, don't worry.
Yeah, it's getting so dark, you can hardly make the sign out.
Here's a flashlight, Margo.
Oh, thank you. There we are. Whittington Hall. Keep out.
That's a nice welcome.
Oh, I'm sure that doesn't mean that. Well, looks like we'll have to walk down this path to get to the house.
I think I can just see it through the trees.
Hmm.
Come on, did you hear that?
Yes. Sounds like little kittens.
Oh, the poor things out in weather like this. I'm going to find them. They seem to be under that bush. Kitty, 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 kitty.
Margo, you'll get so climbing around in that underbrush.
Well, I have them just now.
Margo! Margo, what's in the mix? Dog, giant dog. Get down, you! Get down! Get down! Right here, Margo! Get down, you! Get down! There. They're running away. Margo,
are
you all right?
Yes, I guess so.
They didn't hurt you?
No, one of them ripped my coat, that's all. Come on, I don't understand. They sounded like little kittens.
Yes, I know.
Well, what do you make of it, Lamont?
I don't know. One thing is certain. We're going back to the car and get my revolver.
That's it. That's all I'm going to play from The Voice of Death. If you didn't join me at the top of the hour, The Voice of Death, that should have been episode 14, an original air date of the 26th of December, 1937. However, in the archives, it's listed as preserved. This is given as the episode, but it could have actually been from 1940. Starring Brett Morrison and Marjorie Anderson. I haven't really deviled that far, and it would have been season 4 or 5 of The Shadows. I strictly like to play the Orson Welles, the 22-year-old Orson Welles, before he became the big shot Orson Welles. And there is some gray area, because again, like I mentioned before, smaller little radio stations had their own acting troupes outside of Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, and they would react some of the other more notable episodes or series shows, whatnot. I can't believe I just said one whatnot. But next up, I'm going to play Act 1 of the Society of the Living Dead. This would have been episode 18. Original air dates on the 23rd of January, 1938. I am going to go ahead and play through what I ordinarily talk over, the sponsorship, just for a historical perspective. I was speaking with a fellow community member here on Sunday, and he figured there wasn't any violations in playing sponsorships for companies that are no longer in existence. He has a little more tenure than I do, so I believe his name is Alan. His show's on Sundays here at WMFO from 5 to 6. So we'll go ahead and cue up the Society of the Living Dead. I'm going to play through Act 1, again, through the Blue Coal sponsorship. This is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour on 91.5 FM WMFO.
The Shadow, the mystery man who strikes terror into the very hearts of shopsters, lawbreakers, and criminals. Today, the Society of the Living Dead. In just a moment, the Shadow's exciting adventure will begin. Meanwhile, I have an important message for all you homeowners. We are now in the midst of the most treacherous season of the entire year. But you can protect your family's health during this danger period by burning blue coal. For blue coal gives you clean, uniform, healthful heat all winter long. And its harmless blue coloring is your guarantee of better heat at less cost. So when you order fuel, insist on blue coal. It's Pennsylvania's finest anthracite. Your nearest blue coal dealer will be glad to send you a trial ton. Phone him tomorrow.
Hello, hello. Navy Classic, City Desk.
Yes, go ahead, Turner.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith are being held in Holly military prison as spies. The Smiths are believed not to be American citizens.
What?
Yes. The Prime Minister was handed a note by American ambassador this morning.
Yes, go ahead.
American State Department reported investigating circumstance under which the Smith passports were issued.
Good work, Turner. Keep feeding it. Hold the presses for a new front page story. London correspondent is on the wire. This phony passport racket is being uncovered.
New York, New York. More news on the Smith case. Mr. and Mrs. Smith are not citizens. A fake passport and identification ring is suspected. The name Schwartz was taken from tombstones to secure passports. More startling disclosures are promised by federal agents and local authorities who suspect widespread fraud.
Will you turn that radio off?
All right, Margo. Well, this fake passport and identification racket interest me.
The Scotland Yard in England, the State Department of Washington, the whole New York police force working on that fake passport racket. Do you have to get mixed up in it?
You see, Margo, it ties up with a case that interests me.
You mean the suicide of your broker, Henry Adams?
Yes.
But Lamont, what possible connection could there be? I don't see it.
Well, I didn't see any connection either until today, although Adams never struck me as being the type of man who would commit suicide.
His body was found 2 weeks ago, and they buried him right afterwards in the family vault in Kingland Cemetery. Seems to me that's what you might call a closed case.
No, I don't agree, Margot. I noticed in one of the gossip columns the other day a remark that interested me very much.
What is that?
An item that said that Irene Adams, the orphan daughter of Henry Adams, was being courted by Ray Kelvin.
Oh, Ray Kelvin was Henry Adams' partner, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. But what interested me even more was another item which said that Ray Kelvin was very friendly with a man named Berger, who, according to all reports, is a very questionable character.
I don't see the connection, Lamont.
Well, but much of the evidence points to Berger being mixed up in his business.
Oh, you mean that fake passport and identification ring that we just heard about on the radio?
Yes. Margot, I want you to call on Adams' orphan daughter. Her name is Irene. Pose as a reporter. Ask her about the rumors of her coming marriage with Kelvin and find out if she actually saw the face of her father at any time after his death.
All right, Lamont. Where will you be when I get back?
I'll phone you at my office.
Are you going to visit Berger as Lamont Cranston?
No, Margot. I rather think Berger will be more impressed if I visit him with a shadow.
I'm so sorry, Miss Adams. I know it's hard to talk to a stranger about such personal things so soon after your father's tragic death.
Yes. Yes. True that my father didn't want me to marry Mr. Kelvin. It seems so unfair. Ray Kelvin was his own partner in business.
But you are going to marry Mr. Kelvin.
Yes. I wanted to wait. It's so soon after father's death. But Ray has to go away. To Europe. He may be gone for years.
Oh, I see. Mr. Kelvin's leaving the country. But isn't he indicted on a stock swindling charge?
Yes. Oh, but he says he'll soon have proof that he didn't have anything to do with it.
Miss Adams, don't you realize that Mr. Kelvin can only clear himself by proving that your own father was the swindler?
No, no. Ray wouldn't do that.
Did you ever see your father after they found his body in the river?
No. No. Mr. Kelvin said I shouldn't. He said it would only upset me.
Do you believe your father committed suicide, Miss Adams?
No. I can't bring myself to believe that of that.
What does Ray Kelvin think about your father's death?
Ray said it was suicide. But Dad was worried over what would happen when they tried him on that stock swindle charge.
But don't you see, Miss Adams, Kelvin, your fiancé, has been implying all along that your father is a swindler. That he's going to clear himself by pinning the guilt on your father.
No, no, I can't believe that.
That's why your father opposed your marriage to Kelvin.
No. Why are you saying these things? You have no right. Please go.
Yes, I am going, Miss Adams. I'm so sorry if I've hurt you, but I believe you're going to thank me for keeping you from marrying a treacherous thief. Perhaps even a murderer.
What do you mean? Who are you talking about?
Your dead father's partner. Your fiancé, Ray Kelvin.
All right, Kelvin. What's on your mind?
Now listen, Berger, I want action. I won't be safe till I get Adams to sign a confession taking full blame for that stock swindle.
Yeah. I see you got the confession all ready for Adams to sign.
Yes. Stated the day he was supposed to have jumped in the river.
Hmm. How are you going to account for not having produced the confession until now?
That's easy. I'll just tell the authorities that in going over his papers, I've just found it. The government will have to dismiss the charges against me when I produce this confession signed by Adams.
What are you going to do with Adams after he signs?
That's where you and your man in the morgue come in. You've got the papers that were on the man who was buried in Adams' place. All you have to do is put those papers on Adams when we dump him in the river.
What? That's murder. I've never gone that far before.
And you've never been paid $10,000 before either. Now, come on, quit stalling. Get your hat and coat. We're going to finish this job now.
Now, wait a minute, Calvin, wait a minute. I'll give you back that money. Every cent of it. No, no, I'm afraid of this.
Berger, what was that? Somebody laughed here in this office.
Yes, Calvin. It is the laughter that has echoed through the mind of many a killer during his last hours in the death house.
Who is that, Berger?
Calvin, there's nobody here.
Yes, Mr. Berger. The shadow is here.
The shadow? Calvin, did you hear that? The shadow. He knows. He's heard everything. You can't go through with it now.
Yes, Calvin. I know everything.
Yes? Well, I've heard about you, Shadow. The man who has the power to make himself invisible. I know how you do it. Hypnotic suggestion. Hindu mesmerism. Oriental trickery. Well, you don't scare me.
Your murderous scheme is doomed to failure, Calvin. Give it up before it is too late.
Yeah, listen to him, Calvin. Adams is still alive. We haven't murdered him yet.
No, but we've kidnapped him and we'll burn for that if we're caught. Only we're not going to be caught, Shadow or no Shadow. Come on, Berger. You're coming with me.
No, no, don't make me go through with it, Calvin.
Come on.
Don't.
I'll show you what I think of the Shadow. Come on, or I'll drill you where you stand. And the Shadow if he tries to stop me.
You've had your warning, Calvin. Remember.
Come on, Berger, get going. And as for you, Shadow, here's a warning from me. If you follow us, I'll find a way to kill you. Remember that.
Hello, Margot Lane.
Lamont, I talked to Irene Adams. She never saw her father after he died.
Henry Adams isn't dead, Margot.
Oh, Lamont, are you sure? Where is he?
I don't know, but Berger and Kelvin are on their way to the place where they're holding him, and I'm following them.
Lamont, Kelvin is planning to marry Irene Adams and leave the country in a few days.
Much can happen in a few days, Margot, even in a few hours.
Lamont, let me meet you. Go with you. Maybe I can help.
You can help me most by standing by with a shortwave radio. Keep it tuned in on the band the Shadow always uses.
All right, Lamont. But now you've discovered that Mr. Adams is alive, why don't you let the police handle it?
As far as the police are concerned, Henry Adams is dead. Buried, a closed case.
I guess you're right, but what about Berger and Kelvin? Do they know the Shadow is on their trail?
Yes, and Kelvin has dared the Shadow to follow him.
Lamont, it may be a trap, a trick to get you someplace where all your powers won't save you, where you'll be helpless. Lamont, please don't go. Please.
Margot, I must follow Berger and Kelvin. If they lead me to Adams, I may need help. Stand by, Margot. Stand by until you hear from the Shadow.
The Shadow will return in just a moment. But first, I have a word of warning for you homeowners. Throughout this dangerous winter season, don't subject your...
Conclusion of Act One of the Society of the Living Dead. This one was episode 18, original air date the 23rd of January 1938, starring Orson Welles as Lamont Cranston and the Shadow. Agnes Moorehead played Miss Margot Lane. And Orson Welles was 22 years old during this. If you didn't catch the first part of the show, I played an odd shadow called the Voice of Death. Next up, we're gonna go with good old Britt Ponsett. He's some fan favorites. This one, called A Pressing Engagement. Its original air date was the 6th of December, 1953. This will complete the trident of Act Ones, as I called it. And I played through the Blue Coal advertising on the Society of the Living Dead. There is no advertising here for the Six Shooter. And it was Alan, actually, that I spoke with on Sunday from his show, What's Happening on Sundays from 5 to 6, who clarified that there shouldn't be an issue with me playing that advertising on the radio. But again, we'll go with Act 1 of the Six Shooter, a pressing engagement. Depends on how much time I have left. I do have here with me an Arch Obler, not Lights Out, but he was known for his show Lights Out, because I'm thinking when I run out of shadows to play, what I'm going to fill in next. I don't know if I'm going to go with horror. I'm pretty certain I have, when the Six Shooters run out, what I'm going to have slotted for the western portion of the double billing. But I'm kind of experimenting there with what I want to do when I'm done playing the shadows. So I do have, perhaps have time. I'll play Chicken Heart. If not, I can play out some good old jazz. But either way, here's the Six Shooter.
James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl. Its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman, who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
About the last place I expected to be that Tuesday was the town of Powder Creek. The Double G Ranch where I'd been working was clear on the other side of the territory, neither about 200 miles away. But when Sam Griffith, he's the owner of the Double G, when Sam got a chance to buy off Forrest Trent's herd, he sent me over to close the deal. So the next thing I knew, I was walking down the main street on my way to the bank where I was supposed to meet Trent. Gee whiz, it sure was a nice day. Kind of Indian summer-like. A lot warmer than it had a right to be in October. The sun had fooled the maple trees into thinking it was spring. A couple of them beside the Civil War cannon in the square were even starting to bud. The two fellas sitting underneath it playing checkers in their shirt sleeves, eh? Well, it looked like the sun had fooled them, too. Howdy.
Just a minute, mister. Just a minute till I make this move. There. That ought to hold you, Jonah.
Yeah.
Now, what was it you wanted, mister?
Oh, I didn't want anything. I just said howdy, that's all.
Oh, howdy. Well, speak to the man, Jonah. He spoke to us.
It's my move now. I'll do my talking afterward. Yeah. Howdy.
Ah, it's a nice day.
Yeah.
Well, so long.
Hold up there a minute, son.
Hmm?
Say, see that gun of his, Jonah?
Yep.
You ain't Britt Ponsett, the Six Shooter.
My name's Ponsett, yeah.
You hear that, Jonah? He's Britt Ponsett.
Yep.
And we was kind of wondering when you was going to show up, Mr. Ponsett. Been expecting you for the last month or so.
What's that?
Yeah, when you got to jump, you got to take it. That's the rule.
All right, yep. Jonah. All right, I know the rule.
We'll take it then, take it.
All right. Yeah. There. You satisfied?
You said something about expecting me.
Why, sure. Ever since we heard the news, congratulations.
What?
He said congratulations. Well, let's get on with the game.
All right. Sure move, ain't it?
Yeah, how in thunder should I know? All this chattering going on.
Well, I don't like to keep interrupting, but I wonder if you'd mind explaining just what you meant by
Jonah's trying to think.
Yeah, I know, but then I
don't want him to claim I beat him because we kept him from concentrating.
No, of course not. No, I just... Well, I knew that the Trent cattle would turn out to be good stock. The Double G was lucky to be buying them. But since they weren't going to belong to me, I couldn't see why congratulations were in order. Unless folks in Powder Creek had heard wrong, unless they thought I was outfitting a ranch of my own. And I started to explain things to the fellows playing checkers, but they shushed me again, good and loud this time. So I gave up and went on town toward the bank. I was just passing by the newspaper office when I bumped into Quint Todd. He was editor of the Powder Creek Press, a weekly newspaper. Matter of fact, he was more than just an editor. Quint's pa retired in the last 6 or 7 years, and he was putting out the paper practically single-handed. Afternoon, Quint.
Huh? Yeah. Oh, it's you, Ponset. So you finally got here, huh?
Well, I'm here, if that's what you mean. I didn't realize folks were so anxious about me.
Some of us are anxious, maybe. Some of us ain't.
What, are you upset about something, Quint?
Why should I be upset?
Well, I don't know. Things are all right, aren't they? I mean, with the paper.
Paper's fine. I'll save you the next issue so you can see your name in print.
I sure can't think of any reason why you'd be writing about me.
It's customary, ain't it?
What?
It's customary to write about the groom.
The groom? The what? What?
I'm busy now, Ponset. I got a story to run down.
Well, Quint, listen to me.
I hope you'll be real happy, both of you.
No, but Quint, hey, for Pete's sake, Quint, wait, Quint!
Well, he'd lost his senses. That's the only explanation of that. Quint Todd had just plain lost his senses. That me being a groom, me? And who in the Sam Hill did he think I was going to marry? I hadn't even been keeping company. Not that I have anything against marriage, you understand. I, like people say, it's an institution. A noble institution. Why, some of my best friends are married. And I suppose someday, not right away, of course, not very soon, but someday, maybe I'll...
Hello, Britt. How's on my way to meet you?
Huh?
What's the matter? You look like you just fell off a bronc.
Oh, hello, Trent. I guess I was kind of preoccupied. I was thinking about something.
I reckon we shouldn't expect you to have all your faculties in good working order. Not at a time like this, huh?
What?
Oh, sure was a surprise. Never thought I'd see the day when some woman would put a saddle on you.
What?
Well, we better get over to the bank. I told Mr. Fredericks we'd be there by 3 about. He's drawing up the papers.
Sure. Trent.
Yeah?
Now, about me getting married, the fact of the matter is
Oh, Fred, you know I was just joshing with that saddle talk.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know,
it's high time you did put down some roots.
Maybe so, Trent.
Yeah, you just wait till you got a family of your own. Why, you'll be a different man.
Well, that's possible. That's possible, Trent. But just where did everybody get the notion that I was almost ready to...
You didn't think you could keep it a secret, did you?
A secret?
Well, you ought to know Minnie better than that.
Minnie?
Yeah, that's who told me. Well, of course, there'd been rumors going around for several weeks, but until I heard it from Minnie herself...
Oh, wait, hold on here. You mean Minnie Flint?
Well, who else would I mean? It's her niece you're marrying, ain't it? What are you acting so strange about?
I just want to get this straight. Minnie Flint told you I was marrying her niece?
Well, she told everybody.
I say.
Well, now, Britt, I know how a man feels when he's getting ready to jump overboard. I felt the same way myself, sort of awkward and embarrassed.
Well, be that as
you
it
may. Folks sure. Didn't know about it so they wouldn't poke fun the way they always do. But you can't blame Minnie for spreading the news.
Well, I sure do blame her.
Well, now, Britt, Minnie's been like a mother to Helen, raised her since she was a baby. Well, Helen ain't never had no folks of her own.
I know that.
Well, then, you shouldn't mind Minnie being proud. Why shouldn't she do a little bragging, huh? Well, of course. The women folks around here seem to think you're quite a catch.
Oh, now listen, Diane. Let me tell you something.
Here's the bank. I suppose you'll want to get this business done with pronto so you can get straight over to Minnie's place, huh, Brett?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would like to get over to Minnie's.
I'm coming. Just a minute, I'm coming. Dick.
You mind if I come in, Minnie?
Why, well...
Excuse me. Thanks.
It's sure nice to see you, Brett. I didn't have any idea you were in Powder Creek. I didn't have any idea at all.
Uh-huh.
You're just passing through, ain't you? You're not staying.
Some folks seem to think I am. I at least long enough to get married.
Oh, you've heard.
Well, so is everybody else, far as I can tell. Your announcement of my engagement seems to have blanketed the whole town.
Now, Brett, I can explain.
Well, that's why I'm here.
Why don't you just sit down over there on the sofa? I've got some oatmeal cookies out in the kitchen. I just made them this morning.
Minnie?
Yes?
You just can forget about the cookies. I really don't have much of an appetite.
Oh. Well.
I'm waiting, Min.
Well, you see, Brett, I only did it for Helen. Now, she's a fine girl, and, well, I wanted to help her out.
Oh.
On account of Quint. Quint Todd. They've been going together for nearly 6 years now, but he just never seemed to get around to asking her to marry him.
Well, he must have his reasons. A man usually does.
Oh, it's because of his father. You see, Quint's been taking care of old man Todd ever since he retired. And it must cost money, him being so sickly all the time.
Uh-huh.
But Quint could have married her. Helen don't expect a lot of fancy clothes in a fine house. She's the practical type.
Just what has this got to do with me?
Well, I had an idea. I thought if maybe there was somebody else, if Quint believed Helen was interested in another man, well, maybe he'd come to his senses and take the bull by the horns and marry her himself.
You've been sort of using me as a decoy. Is that the idea?
I knew you was working for the Double G. It didn't seem likely you'd be showing up in these parts. Not for the time being, anyhow. And afterward, well, after Quint and Helen tied the knot, then it wouldn't matter.
Well, you ought to be ashamed of yourself, man. Both you and Helen.
You don't think she knew about it?
She didn't?
Of course not. I didn't dare tell her. Why, she'd have never stood for it.
Well, then how on earth did you manage to convince her that I was interested?
I've got a sister living over in Black Mountain. That's not far from the Double G.
No, but what I mean is, how did you ever...
Well, I... Hmm? There are some letters, and asked her to post them for me. They was love letters, Brett. I sort of changed my handwriting and signed your name.
Minnie Flint.
I guess you might as well know the rest, too. When Helen answered them, when she wrote back to you, well, I kind of saw to it that her answers never got mailed.
Well, I just don't know what to say.
Oh, I never dreamed it'd go this far, Britt. I was sure Quint would start talking serious when he first found out that you and Helen were corresponding, but he didn't. And then, well, I thought maybe if your letters got a little more sincere, well, maybe that would make him jealous. I left him around where he couldn't help seeing them whenever he come calling.
You didn't actually propose in my name.
Oh, no.
Well,
Britt. Well, not in so many words, but reading between the lines, well, that's how Helen took it. She wrote you her answer 2 weeks ago. She wrote yes.
What?
Your letters were mighty convincing.
Well, then you better start figuring out some way of unconvincing her.
Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Look, man, now, Helen's got to know the truth. And if you won't do it, well, I'll just have to tell her all about it myself. Because...
Oh, Constance, I guess maybe he... Why, Brett. Well, he's here already.
Hello, Helen.
Oh, my goodness. Sure is good to see you, Brett. You're looking fine.
Oh, so are you, Helen. So are you.
I wish I'd known you were coming. I wouldn't have been out doing the marketing.
No, it didn't matter.
Oh, Brett, I just gotta tell you.
Maybe I shouldn't say it right out like this, but... Well, ever since I was a little girl, I looked up to you so. Why, it just seemed to me you were the finest man that ever came through Powder Creek.
Now, Helen...
Of course, I never guessed that someday... Well, that you and I... Oh, Britt, I'm so happy about it. Excited and happy. I just hope you're as pleased as I am. Are you, Britt?
Sure, Helen. Sure.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Okay, that's the conclusion of Act One of a pressing engagement. Brett seems to have gotten himself into a little hot water there inadvertently, which he seems to do periodically. Again, the original air date for that one was the 6th of December, 1953. I'll return next week with the conclusion to that and the conclusion to the Society of the Living Dead. Right now, I do have plenty of time. As I mentioned earlier in the show, you're listening to Arthur at the Grand Hour, by the way, 91.5 FM, Tufts Freeform Radio, WMFO.org. As I mentioned earlier during the Grand Hour, when I'm out of shadow episodes to play, I'm looking to maybe go with some horror. I'm not certain. But Arch Obler had his lights out program. We're going to hear Chicken Heart. This was, and I don't know when it was originally done, but this is a recreation that he did in 1962 on his Drop Dead album he released on Columbia. We'll go ahead and listen to Chicken Heart. And it's technically science fiction, which doesn't really fit in with my adventure western double billing. But either way, it's another radio stalwart. We'll go ahead and cue this up and be back in a little bit. Thanks.
No short hairs rising? Then permit me to try you with the science fiction type. With all these Sputniks and satellites circling our Earth, and with all this competitive fission and fusion going on, science fiction horror is the very latest. And we are trying to bring you the very latest. Do you remember some time ago, in an Eastern scientific institution, they kept a piece of heart alive for weeks on end? Well, I got to thinking, what if that heart began to grow? And grow, and grow, and grow.
Hello? Hello, operator, give me Mr. Regan, fast. Hello, Mr. Regan, this is Lewis. Listen, get me a rewrite, man, the thing's still growing. No, Chief, I tell you the truth. The corridor's choked with living, crawling flesh. No, 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 I'm not drunk. I'm telling you the truth. That little piece of flesh has grown until now. It's jamming that building. All inside the space of an hour. You've got to believe me. It's the greatest news story of the generation, and here you argue with me. I tell you, it's the truth. You've got to believe
me. You must believe me. I tell you, the only hope is to burn the building to the ground at once.
Now, wait a minute, Doc. Wait a minute. Take it easy.
I tell you, burn it to the ground. Burn.
And I tell you, take it easy. I sent in a call.
Oh, don't you understand? For some reason, I cannot even imagine. This tissue is doubling in size every hour. Do you know what that means? In another hour, it will be twice the size it is now. And long before that, it will break open the building with the force of its pressure. And then it will be free in the street. Do you hear me? Free in the street. And then those tentacles of protoplasm stretching out to feed on anything they can reach. What's happening? The building! See the walls! Cracking! I warned you!
I tried to warn them. But now it is too late. The heart is free.
Gentlemen, come to order, please. Gentlemen, please. Quiet, please now. As mayor, no one realizes more than I do the necessity of immediate action in curbing this unspeakable, unbelievable emergency.
Cut the speeches, Mac. That blasted thing is spreading like a forest fire. Call the governor. Get the National Guard out.
Wait. Here is Dr. Albert of the Research Institute. Let him speak.
I'm
step
sick
up here,
it.
Doctor.
Got to do something.
Well, let's see what he says.
Gentlemen, it was in my institute this horror began. And if you give me a chance, perhaps I can stop it.
What is it, Doctor? Tell us first what that monster really is.
Yes. Yes, I will tell you. That great, ever-growing mass of flesh. It is, or it was, a chicken heart.
Chicken heart? Are you crazy, man?
Chicken heart? Crazy?
Yes. Chicken heart, I tell you. Chicken heart. Listen to me, you fools. Listen.
Somebody up there knows what he's talking about.
I tell you, that mass of flesh was a chicken heart, the tissue of which, for some reason, is undergoing constant, rapid, accelerating growth. With every passing hour, its growth is doubling. Do you know what that means? If it is now one block in size, within 30 hours, that cannibal flesh will have increased in size to one square block to the 30th power. In 30 hours, every inch of this whole city will be crushed under that moving flesh. Within 60 hours, it will have covered the entire state. Within 2 weeks, the entire United States. You ask for the National Guard. I say, call out the entire army. Blast this thing off the earth.
Ready, Chief? Pumpers are ready. All the hoses coupled up. We'll flood that thing with water from all angles.
All right, here's the signal.
Open them up! Full blast!
Chief, look out! That flesh, it's
back,
reaching out!
Get back, everybody! Everybody back!
The fools, what good is water? I told them. The only hope is artillery. Bombs.
All National Guardsmen, report to your armories. All National Guardsmen, report to your armories. General mobilization order.
Battery in position, sir.
Commence firing on the hour.
Yes, sir.
10, 5, 5, 0.
Commence firing! Fire!
Useless. It has grown too large, and it grows too quickly. The flesh is already engulfing the guns. They came too late.
You all right now, Dr. Alberts?
Yes, I'm all right, Mr. Willis. I'm all right.
Well, I sure am glad I located you. I stalled as long as I could, another 10 minutes, and we couldn't have taken off. That blasted protoplasm, or whatever it is, was sucking at the wheels by the time we left the ground.
Yes, I saw.
5,000 feet. Well, we'll cruise around up here for a few minutes and then head west.
It will do no good.
You can't mean it. It must stop growing sometime. It must.
Look at it down there. The gray blankets of evil covering everything. See how the roads are black with men and women and their children running for their lives. See how the protoplasmic gray reaches out and engulfs them. See.
Stop it! Stop talking like that. We'll get away. The government, they'll send bombing planes, poison gas.
No hope. Listen to me, Lewis. You remember only a handful of days ago you asked me my prophecy of the end of the earth? You remember my answer? Oh, such a scholarly prophecy. Cessation of earth rotation. Mighty sounding astronomical theories. But now, this is reality, Lewis. The end has come for humanity. Not in the red of atomic fusion. Not in the glory of interstellar combustion. Not in the peace of white, cold silence. But with that creeping, grasping flesh below us.
It is a joke, hey, Lewis? A great joke. The joke of the cosmos. The end of mankind.
Why?
Because of a chicken's heart.
No! No, we won't die. I can't die. I'll find a safe landing somewhere. I'll find a place. The motor, it's cut out. We're in a spin. I can't get out of it.
I told you, doomed.
No, no.
All mankind, doomed.
No. We're falling right into it, into the heart.
Chicken Heart, an Arch Obler. Arch Obler released an album called Drop Dead in 1962. That was part of it. That's what they reconfigured, or redid it, essentially. Maybe souped it up. I'm actually having some technical difficulties here. Of course, I can't go a whole show without having some issue with what I want to play next. I don't have some of that. Let me just play through this again. Should be Radio Morning with Gaz. I'm not certain. I believe so. Well, that's really good English. I'm not certain. I believe so. She's scheduled to be on here in about 8 minutes. Well, I'm just trying to figure out how to play this, because I'm not going to dead air. And that one's not going to work. Arthur, the Grand Hour, here on WMFO, Medford, 91.5 FM, WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio. Let me know what you think about that Arch Obler Lights Out, because, again, I changed the formatting. I'm considering going with that, with horror, like the Lights Out type feature. I'll just go ahead and cue up my emergency music. We'll play out through that until I get my request ready. And thanks for listening. One as a request, because I'm kind of going through show ideas here. I have wanted to play some poetry when I was first getting involved in the Grand Hour. I was thinking about show ideas. I wanted to have some teacher some poetry. So this one's a request from my number one fan, which I don't really know if he's my number one fan, but he has to be. Shel Silverstein off of Where the Sidewalk Ends. I'll have to track this too, but I'll do that later. Too much going on right now. Thanks.
I cannot go to school today, said little Peggy Ann McKay. I have the measles and the mumps. A gash, a rash, and purple bumps. My mouth is wet. My throat is dry. I'm going blind in my right eye. My tonsils are as big as rocks. I've counted 16 chicken pox, and there's one more. That's 17. And don't you think my face looks green? My leg is cut. My eyes are blue. It might be in stomatic flu. I cough and sneeze and gasp and choke. I'm sure my left leg is broke. My hip hurts when I move my chin. My belly button caving in. My back is wrenched. My ankle sprained. My appendix pains each time it rains. My nose is cold. My toes are numb. I have a sliver in my thumb. My neck is stiff. My spine is weak. I hardly whisper when I speak. My tongue is filling up my mouth. I think my hair is falling out. My elbows bent. My spine ain't straight. My temperature is 108. My brain is shrunk. I cannot hear. There is a hole inside my ear. I have a hangnail. And my Hardee's.
What? What's that? What's that you say?
You say today is Saturday. Goodbye. I'm going out to play.
Yeah, and that was Shel Silverstein. Shel Silverstein off his Where the Sidewalk Ends album. Don't really know when that one came out. I probably should have done a little bit more homework on that before I played it, but it was a last-minute request, literally. Last-minute request. Thanks for listening to The Grand Hour. I'm Arthur. I'll be back next week with a bunch of Act 2s, I reckon. Until then, I'm going to play out with some jazz. Today's April 11th. Have a nice day.